Baseball fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win a prize every day during the baseball season. Step into the batter's box for BetMGM's Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. Pick any area of the strike zone and take your best swing. If you get a single, double, triple, or home run, you'll receive a prize. Smash a home run to collect a bonus bet on us. Just log into your BetMGM Sports account to get started. Then visit your promotion section to access the Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. You'll score a prize if you hit a single, double, triple, or home run. There's nothing more exciting than going yard, so swing for the fences with the king of sportsbooks. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary depending on the market and expire 24 hours from issuance. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
Get everything you need for your next project today at Menards and save big money. LP SmartSide products are the number one brand of engineered wood siding. SmartSide trim and siding offers long-lasting performance and delivers the warmth and beauty of traditional wood. Save big money today at Menards and LP SmartSide products. Plus, visit Menards.com to view the weekly flyer and check out all of our great deals happening this week.
Save big money at Menards.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Anyway, she goes to bed. I open up a box of apartments. I light up. I call myself a cognac. And I watch the 14 fists of McCluskey. What a picture.
Yo, homie, is that my briefcase?
And start asking the right fucking questions.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to a very special Rum and Rant on One Heat Minute Patreon. I'm your host, Blake Howard. This should have been a genuine multiple different servings of rum and rant. Like, there were many rums consumed. And in United States of America, for anyone who's listening in Australia, they don't have a thing called responsible service of alcohol. So every rum was a healthy daddy pour of rum. And one of my guests of that little recording is now had to come back with me to sort of like retroactively... exhume the corpse of a conversation that was completely destroyed and turned into gobbledygook by my recording device, which is typical of any podcaster who has ever lived to have a remote recording device absolutely shit the bed on you. And it's just not fun. But I wanted to have this conversation. I wanted to have it then. I'm keen to have it now. But for anyone who's listening, as I'm recording this, it has been 3 years and one day since I dropped the finale of One Heat Minute with Michael Mann. And I did it on purpose on my son's birthday. And I'm not sure if I've told people this. I dropped it at like 9 a.m.-ish Sydney time on my son's birthday so I could put my phone down and run away. So I just could be adequately distracted by all of the fun of a first-year-old's birthday and friends and family without being completely consumed by my phone. Towards the end of the day, once family went away, then I could go and see how people had reacted to it. But I thought I would bring back a true One Heat Minute crew family member, who was recently not only in New York City, for the, Tribeca Heat screening, flew there specifically, bought me a ticket, sat next to me in the screening, and even has now got even behind the scenes stuff of not only I don't actually mimic the lines, but he's now since discovered that I mimic the hand gestures. One of my dearest friends, crime author extraordinaire and screenwriter Jordan Harper. Hello, my friend.
Hey, how you doing, man? I'm a little freaked out here because I didn't realize it's been 3 years since the finale of.
Yeah.
Well, time just gushes as if from a wound, doesn't it? It's just like in arterial sprays. It's just like that's really hard for me to get my head around because I would have said that happened a year ago, honestly, yeah. If you'd asked me when that had happened.
That was just in the before times, so to speak, right? It was just at that time, 2019. I was planning a trip in 2020 to come to LA, you know, that which would have formed like the celebration of the end of One Heat Minute. We talked about it and then it just disappeared. So like it's on Keith's birthday, so I will never forget it. You know, I'll never forget that the day that it dropped, not only because I will never forget it, but also like it's on an anniversary that means to me. And it's like, time flies. Like I look at the photos, there's a photo of Garth, Franklin, Stu Coote and I like cheersing with this beautiful bottle of Johnny Walker Blue, a very expensive bottle of booze. And we're cheersing together and it's on Keith's first birthday that we're doing it. It's crazy. So yeah, he's now four. He turned four yesterday. So that's where we are. It's nuts. And it also feels, if I didn't just see you and if we didn't just like have a little chat in the preamble before like hitting record properly on this, it almost feels like that trip wasn't real. It happened so fast. And we were together like three consecutive days, but like it feels so surreal to me. Like it doesn't even feel like it happened.
Well, I'm sure it's much more like that for you because A, you literally flew around the world. To be there, you were there for what, 72 hours?
No, not even
48.
Let's just say 40 hours, probably.
Jesus. And I just remember when you showed up, and you're going to be insane for 2 days because you don't know what time it is. It's literally opposite time. your friends from the internet are walking out of the screen. Yeah. And walking up to you and then, oh, and hey, everybody, here's Robert De Niro. Like, what a strange, surreal thing. And then you left. I was in New York for another 3 days.
Yeah.
Because I had business to do. But like, that made me sound so fancy. I had business
to
do.
You are fancy.
I am. but you were just, it was like the length of time that you go down with COVID, right?
I had a COVID isolation, except it was on planes and it was back coming back from New York, essentially the equivalent of what an isolation would be. But yeah, you please go.
Not to jump around too much, but to go back to the rum and rant aspect of this, we were in the, after the screening, cause you've talked about the screening, we're just doing commentary here. After the screening, we all walked to that fantastic bar in the Bronx that set out those tables for us so kindly. And you were so blown away by, I guess they just pour weak drinks in Australia is basically what it comes down to.
Australians are alcoholics. Like it's a country trait. People drink quite a bit. And so you have to have responsible service of alcohol because people just tip them back. They just go crazy and it's too much. So I'm accustomed in Oz, like they have that, you know, the little fixed shot glasses. I'm sure you guys would see them, right? The little fixed like metal shot glass or whatever. They pour it in they do the fixed pours. So in Australia, usually what I do is this is truly rum, deep cut rum and rant. I go and get two Captain Morgans and Diet Cokes, if you can get them, or, you know, Coke Zeros. I go get two Captain Morgans and Coke and come back to the table. And usually what happens is on my way back to the table, because they're weak pours, I just drink one and it is gone. And then I go back and I sip the next drink because I'm used to pouring my own drinks at home, especially with COVID, and pouring my own drinks at home. And they are not any responsible service of alcohol happening in my house. So
right.
When it comes to me pouring for myself. And so when I was there, I was at the bar and I grabbed one of those drinks and I went to do my traditional, like just tip it back and drink it and pound it and then just put it back on the bar and pay for my drinks and walk back. And I got like three quarters of the way through and I was like, this is a me pour. Like what's going, you guys don't have, what's going on here? You don't have responsible service of alcohol here? What's going on? And you guys are like, no, we don't. I'm like, wow.
Well, I had a similar experience at that bar in the Bronx, and I'm not faulting them because this is not what they do there. But since I don't drink anymore, I ordered my usual Diet Coke, and I, like you, grabbed my first Diet Coke and tipped it back, and it hit my you know, tongue, and I was like, this is the worst Diet Coke I've ever had in my life. And it was like I don't know, they had like bought a tank of the Diet Coke spray or whatever it is,
yeah,
and then
the premix crap
and then just like left it open for a while just to like let it like, you know, dry age or ferment or something and get rid of all the bubbles. It was like somebody had learned, like didn't understand that it was supposed to be carbonated. It was truly a really bad Diet Coke. But again, that's not the bar's job. I understand that the Diet Coke at a bar is, you shouldn't be drinking rum and Diet Coke, because who are you fooling? There's sugar in the rum. Like, come on. Come on. But like, but it was a tremendous amount of fun to be there. And I'll say the other thing is, I'm a fellow what goes to bed around 10 o'clock at night. Generally I get up in the morning. I do all my writing very early. So I am, especially since, like I said, sober for 14 years. So like I am not used to being out till 3 a.m. anymore. And I was so tired.
Two mornings in a row, Jordan, we were out together until 3 a.m.
And all I could think of is, I'm not allowed to be tired because Blake is here. and if Blake isn't tired, and he flew around the world to be here. I know it's technically halfway around the world, but that's around the world. Cause like, you know, you're not gonna fly all the way around the globe and just wind up back where you were. So I'm sticking this out. Also because, you know, this was the amount of time I had to spend with you as a good friend. And I wanted to, and Sean Burns and the
gang.
And the gang.
Yeah, nice little gang there.
Yes. Oh, so many. I was so glad to meet. And I should know his real name, but I can only know him as Michael Manfax. I was so glad that Michael Manfax was there.
I'm reticent to say Michael Manfax's real name because he doesn't say it to many people, but like we will know him. We can say that off air. We can say, but yeah.
Oh, well, no, I know what it is. I know what it is.
Manfax is such an adorable kid. He's kind of like millennial. He's like a millennial me. And I'm too old for that shit, but he's just living it. I love it.
Yes.
It's so great. And
so much more conversant in being able to communicate with memes in a way that I'm much too old to do.
Way too old and have no interest in. I need 120 hours to stew on something. This kid needs one picture, one picture with an adjusted caption. But yeah, no, it was good. It was a wild time. And you know, we were together, we had a blast. I've since, you know, there's an upcoming podcast I'm on. I actually talk about Heat. My friends, Alexi and Cam, have a podcast called Total Reboot. And I'm on their show talking about Heat because they're doing a heist miniseries. And I actually mentioned you because I'm like, my friend Jordan and I were sitting together howling, laughing at Al Pacino trolling the internet by suggesting that Timothée Chalamet would play him, and everyone believing that it's a fact, and everyone missing the next line that he said, and yeah, and Harry Styles should play Bob because he's such a great singer and dancer. And it's just like, all these people who then took that as gospel, are you fucking idiots? Like, you're all so stupid. I was like, we were howling, laughing. How did everyone miss the joke?
No, nobody could have been in that room and thought any real news was dropping at any point in that conversation, that Al Pacino at this stage in his life is the vehicle for true facts stated. You know what I mean? this is not a news source that you go to. No, and it was tremendous fun. And you said this already, but like, it was amazing to sit next to you watching this movie. And do you know that you do the hand gestures, or you just like,
I don't know. I've I think it's happening more and more because I watch it and it's like second nature. I just watch it and I just know every detail and I know every beat. And I just find myself, you know, like with your favorite, this is so weird. I'm going to confess this. I haven't told anyone this. I like to run. I used to run quite a bit. I haven't run as much recently because I've been so goddamn busy, but because it just takes time. But I should make time. But there's been times where I've been running and like doing really hard runs. And sometimes it's like 5 or 10 Ks or, you know, especially the 10K ones where you're just like, it's a hot day. I don't want to be doing this. I hate it. This is a dumb idea. Why am I doing this? Why run? And what I've found myself doing to comfort myself sometimes is if I'm in the middle of the run, I sometimes just start quoting Heat in my head.
Mm.
I just start saying the whole lines. And like, there's been multiple times where I'll say the whole coffee house speech to myself. And if anyone's watching me, they probably think I'm insane because I'm like probably saying it out loud and I'm doing the faces and I'm doing the gestures just while I'm running to keep myself distracted from the fact that I hate what I'm doing running. And so I think that now it just happens. You know, sometimes like when you're a little kid, parents are like, please don't say the lines before they happen. Stop, stop that. And I find myself as a dad sometimes and my kids, when we're watching like Bluey episodes, they've seen 10,000 times, like Hazel's even like quoting the lines and I can't hate it because it's a film nerd thing to do, but I'm like, don't say it. Let's watch it. If you like it, let's watch it. So I stopped myself from saying the lines and I think the gestures is just like a second nature thing. I don't even know that I'm doing all the time.
Well, that's good. And it's good because you still clearly like get something out of seeing the movie. And I think that's amazing that you don't feel, because I personally, I drift between favorites a lot. Like, yeah. I think right now, if I had to pick one, I think I might watch Miami Vice first these days.
Yeah, it's not a bad shout. It's great. I went through a little Manhunter phase a while back where I was like, that movie is so good.
We were talking about this in New York. I really have been trying to collect special scenes that regard procedurals. Mm. You know, like I was talking about, like the questioning scene in LA Confidential where he's flipping the switches, yeah. And you know, trying to find these moments that you've seen the overarching beat a million times, but what is the special version of it? And to me, I just rewatched Manhunter, I think right before the trip, and him figuring it out scene, yeah. Where he's watching the videos and he's talking and what's his name is just standing there watching him think. He's not even really in the scene, you know, he's just watching. But you can see, because he's the guy who started this. What's that actor's name? I'm sorry. I'm
Dennis Farina. Dennis Farina plays, is the boss character that you're talking about. And yes. William Peterson is up front and he's just,
yes.
As Will Graham, like going.
But like Dennis Farina is sitting there and he's watching him and he doesn't do anything in the scene. But you realize this is why the movie starts with him going to the beach and getting him out of retirement. It's like, this is actually his victory playing out and he doesn't have to do anything because his victory was getting Peterson to this place. But Peterson's performance and the actual way that the thing that he is watching is the revelation of the clue and the music and just the there are other parts of that.
And Farina, like, on the phone in the background, like 3/4 of the way through the monologue.
Yeah.
Open the box, rip the tape off, like all that, like, oh, it's so good.
It's really, I mean, you can watch a lot of detectives solving the crime. And I don't know if you'll ever find one that has that much unity of his character, the mystery itself, the production. It's just so, it's just really magically done. And I think there are other parts of that movie where Peterson's performance, I think, teeters into camp a little bit, that you watch them, you son of a bitch.
Yeah,
but in that moment you get like, oh, this is why this guy was put in this role, he's so good in it. But no, I agree, Manhunter's fantastic. I don't know, there's something about the romance of Miami Vice that's been very appealing to me recently.
Oh, it's so, yeah, you know, Katie and I can't wait to get back to Miami. We've been doing Tokyo Nice as our little mini series. We can't wait to get back to Miami. We've got a few big episodes coming up, so we're looking forward to it. But yeah, I still get, there's just no movie that holistically makes me feel like Heat does. I mean even my favorite movies, you know, Apocalypse Now, you know, and I would say this pretty comfortably, it's like Apocalypse Now, like No Country for Old Men, All the President's Men, you know, Dude Cinema 101, basically, Zodiac, you know, there are these certain films that just from top to bottom, and even like the more, something more fanciful or silly, like, someone might not consider it like a masterpiece of cinema, but like Predator, something like something as tight and as lean and as fun as like a Predator or The Thing or something like that. But like, I just, when I watch Heat, it just literally has everything that I could possibly want in a film. It has absolutely everything. It's got great lines. It's got immaculate performances that modulate between absolutely hilarious and the most impactful performances I've ever seen committed to screen by a screen actor. It's just the canvas, the crescendo, like just nothing. I don't know. There's just like almost nothing better. But I will say this, there's only one version of Heat for me that gets me to like the full crescendo, and that's the 35 mil print. Like the 4K versions with the little tweaks, okay, aesthetic, maybe it's like the best plastic surgery a person could ever have, right? You know, that person, whatever work they've had done where it like looks like it's invisible, that's the kind of work that it's had done that allows you to lie to believe that there hasn't been some tweaks, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. But I genuinely think that 35 mil print, the original cut, with that original color, with LA raw, it almost feels like, because it's just the filmic light. It's just LA. It's just Dante Spinotti lighting those scenes, and it's just Michael Mann framing them. Man, when I saw that last, oh, wow. Just wow. It is just like, you don't need to mess with perfection. It's perfection.
That's interesting. I mentioned this a little bit off air with you that last night I went to go see the 4K remaster of Lost Highway by David mm-hmm. Lynch, which with our friend Travis. And I had actually seen it maybe 7 or 8 months ago on a 35 millimeter print, also with Travis. But and that is a movie that like fully deserves to be seen in a theater. I think not very many people have gotten that chance, at least recently, and if you ever get to, it's such an amazing dream of a film. But I think maybe it's time to start talking about, are these 4K remasters really that great? This one had, and I didn't get a chance to talk to Travis about this, I wondered if he thought the same thing. Some of the daytime shots were so remastered, it almost started to have that like motion smoothing effect that we like despise on people's television screens. There was a lack of grain and things felt a little over bright. I'm not an expert in talking about this aspect of filmmaking, so I'm not sure I'm using the correct language, but there was something about it.
You're talking about it, the feeling of it yeah. is like that it's being tinkered with, that it's a lie. Well,
and it's a lie, and it just doesn't feel quite. I will also say the theater we saw it in, Glendale Lamley, the theater is too bright. They like they need to turn the lights at the bottom of the floor off a little bit. So that kind of messed with it as well. But I not that I think it needs to be like scratchy or like that it has to be an old print, but there was just something about that 35 millimeter that I think feels more like a dream, and is it's particularly with like something like Lost Highway, which is a dream. But just, you want that totality, that qualia that I talk about of like every aspect of the film plays against each other to create like the heat qua heat, if I can just be really pretentious about it. But like, but that's what I mean. Like that's what it is to me. That's what qualia is this idea of the thing that is heat that is the sum of all of the parts. And it does sometimes, I mean, Wong Kar-wai did it within The Mood for Love with those remasters. I haven't watched the new Criterion of Miller's Crossing, where they cut like a 10 second bit of dialogue for Miller's Crossing in the new Criterion.
I haven't seen the new Criterion version. Thankfully, I have the previous version.
That's how I feel. It's like, because to me now, and maybe somebody who's never seen the movie will watch it, they won't know what's missing and they won't feel this. But to me, and it's just a little, it's when Tom hits that guy with the chair. Yeah. And the guy goes like, oh, Jesus, Tom. Like they just like cut a little bit of that out. They cut like the Jesus Tom or something out of it. And I don't know why I even care, but it's just like, I will always know what's missing. I will never not know it.
And this is the thing. I will always know that the line, ferocious, aren't I, is no longer in Heat. And it will drive me insane until I die. And I might have it as like, what do you call it? Like the monograph on my tombstone, if I have such a thing. Ferocious, aren't I, Blake Howard? Like, because if it will live beyond me, that line. And like, and the fact of, you know, taking away the detritus line, which was one big, you know, oh, it's, you know, pretentious, whatever. And it's like, no, it's not pretentious. It's exactly spot on, because she's a hyper intelligent woman who's been rehearsing a fight with a guy over that kitchen sink for months. And it's a stupid line that someone in that position would want to use. And now that it's gone, is the sum total of the film different? No, but there is some extra herb and spice, some note that is not there. There's some tone, some secret sauce is not there. And I don't know. And yeah, so I think some of the 4Ks are brilliant, because what they do is they get a stunningly restored film print and they put it on the screen. And they don't do too much color corrections other than to enrich blacks that are sometimes drowned out in prints that are just used to death. But what I like is those ones that don't get tinkered with too much. And if you do want to tinker with it, this is the thing about physical media nerds. I will buy every version. So why don't you just give me a version that is all the cuts of it? Just give me one. I'll buy it. If it's $150, I'll buy it. Give me all the versions. The original theatrical cut. It's like the great, you know, the Apocalypse Now has that brilliant version that has the theatrical, the redux, the final cut, Hearts of Darkness, the filmmaker's Apocalypse, and it's all together. And it's like, that's like, oh, cool. I'll just have them all. And it's like, even with like, for Michael Mann, I'm like, give me both versions of Heat. Give me the 35 untouched. Even just the Blu-ray one for the Warner Brothers cut, better. Like, give me that and whatever's next. And they've been doing it on imprint, which, you know, I in sort of a biased way, like, love so much. But it's like Austin and Weekend, there's the original theatrical cut from Peckinpah. And then there's the brand new Peckinpah cut that he was never allowed to release. And it's like, I have both. And I can watch them at my leisure, and whichever version I like or whatever mood takes me, I can watch them both. There's nothing I detest more than when a director like wipes the previous cut.
Yeah.
You need the context, because if you've grown up with it your whole life, you want it. And it's like recently the Warriors finally restored the theatrical cut, even though Walter Hill brought out this other version that had like animation and stuff in it that people had kind of grown up with. It was the only version I'd seen for years. I'm like, theatrical cut's perfect. Just give me that. That's all I want.
Well, I mean, with all full respect to the auteur, they often are better. And it's not always just nostalgia that makes us say that. I mean, I think there's a lot of times where you go, oh yeah, no, you make it leaner, you make it tighter. You know, you need somebody else in your life to like help you with the cuts. Now, sometimes those cuts are bad and don't need to be made. I'm not saying that as a blanket statement, but like, I think anytime you're cutting for pace or tone, I think oftentimes it's particularly cutting for pace. It just, directors are not always the best judge of their own pace.
And on the inverse of that, sometimes they are. Like, there's Alan J. Pakula, when he made All the President's Men, this is the coolest story in all of my research in that show that I found, which is he really liked lead-ins to scenes and lead-outs, silence. And so when he sent it all back to his editor to assemble, the editor instinctively thought the silences were like coders on the scenes to help edit them easier. So he cut it all out and made this version. And they watched it and they're like, this thing feels like it goes for 5 hours. It's not moving. It's so like, what's wrong? And they just went, no, do an assembly cut where all of those moments and pauses, and they're deliberate. So he then went back and cut it again. And when they added those, the air, the movie felt like it went for 10 minutes, like it just flew. And it was just because there was something inverse about that experience where you needed the silences to process the density of the information. And as you did it, you were kind of like helping, it was helping you augment your understanding of the different characters, how they're feeling, what was happening in the scenes, getting a handle on what was, you know, orientating yourself throughout the movie. And so, yeah, like I kind of think like, you know, in a world where physical media versions are like gold, like mm-hmm. just like there's three versions of Ali. I want them all. There's three versions of Miami Vice. I want them all. Guess what? I own them all. Yeah. There's two versions of Heat. I own them all. There'll be a 4K version. I'm going to own that too. Like every version I'm going to own. And it's just like nice. Wouldn't it be nice if we just put these all in one package? You know?
No, I agree. And by the way, yeah, any of my, I certainly support them. Like do the 4K, do tweaks, but I'm not a cop. You know, that's, you know, do what you
I'm
want.
I'm not a cop.
That's my motto. I think
it is your motto.
I am not a cop. But like I do, yeah, I agree with you. I don't like it when they go away because I think people need to be able to compare and contrast and be able to like, you know, just appreciate the physical media, you know, I'm not trying to hijack this into a David Lynch cast, but I can't think of another major director who has less of his stuff available easily on physical media.
Yeah, it's hard.
It's really bizarre. It's, you know, Lost Highway doesn't have a proper release. Inland Empire doesn't really have a proper release.
Or they're in regions. This is what happens. You end up having like the British version. And like for the longest time, there was like a weird German version of The Key that you could get or something.
Oh,
like
right.
Or there's another German version of other Lynch films as well.
I have a German box set of Mulholland Drive, Lost Highway, and Inland Empire.
I think my Inland Empire is a foreign version.
Yeah, I don't think there's ever. I mean, I think there was a DVD release at one point.
Yeah.
Because I reviewed it. But there hasn't been like why the Criterion doesn't just like put out all of his films. And maybe they will. Maybe that's why they're doing these 4Ks. But you know, on a totally different tack, having just come out of COVID, you sink down to the level of your lizard brain, I found out that my lizard brain exists for the Carolco movie studio.
Yes. Oh, bless Carolco. Yes. So good.
I watched so many of their films. I watched both Rambos. I watched Total Recall.
Where's the Carolco collection?
There should be one. And then I watched Basic Instinct.
Yeah.
And that
great
is
noir film. Great noir film.
I want to be clear about this. When I say it's a perfect film, I don't mean that it is like perfect the way Heat is perfect. I mean it's perfect the way a shark is perfect.
Yes.
It is exactly what it is. It is that thing more purely than any other. I mean, you want to see what a great movie Basic Instinct is, watch it and then try and watch Jade directly afterwards, which I did. I tried to watch Jade directly afterwards. And I mean, that's something, you know, Jade is like, that's William Friedkin. That's not like a...
Not a terrible movie, but it's trying to do all the same things, but it's all the cheapest version of that. Like, that's the other thing about Basic Instinct. It's like, it spares also no expense for this thing that should have zero expense. Like, it takes... Yeah. It gives something like millions and millions more dollars than it ever has any right to have. And so, therefore, it's this big, decadent thing that's ultimately grubby, but it's gorgeous. Oh, my God. And Sharon Stone's performance... deeply underrated because it's so exploitative probably from the filmmakers to her, but it's like maybe the best noir like performance from a woman almost ever. Like she's in the conversation.
She's tremendous in it. Michael Douglas, I know that, I think it was Jen and Jen Johans and Sean Byrne who did the Michael Douglas tripping over his dick podcast, which I think was Sean's.
That's a... there's a certain turn of phrase that only Sean Burns can do. And whenever a new review pops up, I'm like, I'm mining for the Sean Burns-ism from every piece of writing that he does. Cause I'm like, there's going to be some gem in here that you would only hear in a bar. And I want to read it. I want to read it so bad.
But you know, it's just, and again, to get back to that, like that, it's just like the unity of everything about that film. Like you're saying, the sumptuousness, the luxury that is a very sexy luxury. The luxury in Jade is very chilly. It's like a lot of tuxedos and like Baroque art. And in Basic Instinct, it's like Ferraris and like these like, you know,
yeah,
fur-lined beds or whatever they have, you know? And like, it really, it works tremendously well. And it is, you know, the plot just, it really is just a shark of a film.
Yeah.
And I was just, I was really, of all of the movies, I also watched Showgirls again, which I am a Showgirls, I'm a Paul Verhoeven, like, deep defender.
The only thing you need to know is that it's a satire. Like, if you watch it as a satire of American decadence, it's like he took Basic Instinct and made the most decadent movie of all time, and then he made Showgirls, which was just like the biggest satire of American decadence of all time. Like, they're an amazing pair. Like, it may not be a perfect movie, but man, it's effective. Like, holy shit.
Well, like, and it's, you know, Paul Verhoeven has no problem both satirizing, intellectualizing something, and also making it awesome at the same time.
You just nailed the third ingredient that so many things miss, which is actually, no, that's the thing that, that's the difference that I would argue, because I'm a fan of Quentin Tarantino's Death Proof, right? Mm. And the difference was with Planet Terror is that I think Robert Rodriguez ultimately was making a movie and like really wants it to feel like schlock, and just does this thing where he sidesteps into the movie actually being schlock. Whereas Tarantino wants it to feel like schlock, but is ultimately driven to make the thing that he's making awesome. So it's like, even in Death Proof, where like it has the schlocky elements, that car chase with like Zoe on the front of that freaking amazing car at the end is insane and is one of the most awesome things ever put to screen. You're like, oh no, the awesome quotient is the third bit. If you don't do awesome and the other stuff, it never hits.
Well, it's that thing of intentional camp, right? And intentional camp being used as an excuse to be lazy or to be, oh, we know it's dumb, so we're just making it dumb. And, you know, he's just, I think Paul Verhoeven is just operating at multiple levels at once. And you see it in RoboCop, I mean, for sure.
RoboCop is something, I don't know. That's like time, place, city, everything about texture, everything about that movie is just
two of the most spectacular villains. Miguel Ferrer is so, so slimy in that movie. And then I forget the actor's name, but the dad from that 70s show, with like can you fly, Bobby? is such a good, I also watched Total Recall this last week. And so I'm just very big on that. Paul Verhoeven. I haven't watched Benedetta yet. I really need to see that.
Oh yeah, Benedetta is a movie. All you need to know is that Benedetta is a movie where a lesbian nun is having dreams about a hot Jesus, really hot warrior Jesus. And I made my wife come in and watch a scene, and she was like, "What is this?" And I'm like, "It's Paul Verhoeven, babe."
It's
going to be right up your alley. I really wanted to chat to you because I'm like, it has been like this is always great, us talking. So thank you. But,
no, of course.
But it was really a dream and it was surreal. And you were right there. Like, you got to see me right there. It was you, myself, John Glynn, you know, Connor O'Donnell, Sean Burns at our little table. We had these extended tables, Bilger and a whole bunch of his friends were there. And we had other friends that had joined us and extended friends and family of all the people that were kind of around us. But it was an utterly surreal experience. And one of the things I remember was you kind of like talking about what it's like to watch Heat with me. And that was the thing that I just wanted to sort of like clarify, is like the hand gestures thing was one thing, but is there anything else you remember? Because like, only weeks before, I'd introduced a screening in Sydney and I found myself like really overwhelmed. I was with the guys and it kind of like at that moment, it felt like an even more important screening to me, because it was the moment that I decided 100% I was going to New York. So I'd introduced the screening to Heat. I just got this new job. I knew I was going to New York and I watched the movie and it got to the end and I was just overwhelmed. And like, that movie just overwhelms me in so many ways. And then we watched it together and I was still overwhelmed. And then at the end of it, it was like, I was almost like, usually I'm, in tears and I walked quietly out of the cinema after he, but this time it was like, there was just joy. There's people rallied around us. Like people came up to us and it was just, I don't know, man. It's one of the most special experiences of my life. I'm so grateful you were there for it. It was just, I don't know if there's anything else you want to say about it, but it was that moment and that little kind of in the bar sitting around afterwards. I don't know. It felt like the moment in the Hobbit movies, the first ones, the Lord of the Rings, where like, all the hobbits are like sitting in the bar looking around at all these people that have like done all this crazy shit. And for me, it was like this crazy experience of what One Heat Minute is and looking around and seeing all these faces like literally come to life. And I'm like, fuck, look at this. Isn't this special?
Well, that's exactly right. It was just, it was a special opportunity. And the moment I saw that those tickets were going on sale, I bought two. You know, and it was, well, either I'm going to get Blake to fly to America or I'll find somebody to go with me, or, you know, I'll find someone else to do the trip. But I was just like, I'm taking the chance because, like, you know, life is short. I mean, that's like a trite thing to say, but life is short. And these are the kind of things you'll never forget. And the chance, you know, obviously Michael Mann wasn't able to be there, with the idea that, like, you know, you were going to get to meet Michael Mann. I had had conversations with somebody, maybe it was Travis. I don't remember that. I was like, I am steeling myself up for the moment that I am with Blake. And somebody goes, okay, Blake, it's time for you to go meet Michael Mann. And Jordan, you stay here. And I was ready for it because I was like, no, of course, because Blake A will be flying across the country and he's Mr. One Heat Minute. This is the way the world should work. And I am happy to be there for it. And that didn't specifically happen, but like a lot of great things did happen. And you got to meet De Niro, which is I count that as me half meeting him or something. I don't know.
My friend Stu said, I'm dining out on you meeting De Niro for the rest of my life.
Yes.
And I'm just like, I'm happy. And even my friends are like, De Niro, what?
I have told your story of meeting De Niro to people because you get to talk about like, and then he gave him the De Niro look and everybody does the, you know, everybody does it, and you know, it's bringing us together.
Shout out to John Glynn, who is our great One Heat Minute fan, super fan, who was there from Chicago, who does an amazing De Niro face. I didn't realize how good his De Niro face was, but he did a spectacular one. It was really spot on. But yeah, it's, I don't know, man. It's the crazy.
No, it was a once in a lifetime kind of thing to do, and I'm really glad I got to be there for it. And look, we've been friends now for longer than I even realized, because you said 3 years, and I. That means that we've known each other for at least four, right?
Yeah, four or five. At least. You'd been on One Heat Minute. I was wrong. You'd been on three times, but I thought you were like on like five or six. I'm like, you were on six times. And you're like, no, man, two. And I was like, no, it can't be two. It ended up being three. It ended up being three times. But we chatted so many times. I was like, there's no way. But, you know, this never-ending pandemic.
Yeah, no, I came in late to One Heat Minute, but I came in hard, I think is the thing.
Oh, you came in so hard. Yeah, you did the best, like, here's my action figures. And I was like, what? And like, actually, you know, people know him online as Another Film Nerd, and I can't say that his name because he's kept some anonymity with his online persona. But like, he knew about your LA Confidential pilot first. And I think it was around the time that he was interviewing you for that great series that we have in Graffiti with Punctuation, which is like Unseen Hollywood. And he was like, interviewed you about that. And then like almost like minutes afterwards, I remember getting a text from you. And I'm like, oh, did you say you, like, I just read this interview about this LA Confidential pilot. And then we followed each other. And then you're like, here's my Heat action figures. I'm like, oh my God, why haven't you been on the show? It's just the stupidest thing ever.
The moment I learned about it, I made my move. So just to be clear,
I made the move.
No, look, and you know, look, I'm sure you've talked about, I listened to the podcast you did debriefing, and I can't remember. You talk about the fact you wore a suit. Did you tell everybody that you wore your Neil McCauley suit?
Yeah. I don't know if I went into too much detail, but it was just like,
you did.
No. So I have this gray suit, which I call my Neil McCauley suit, but it also could be called my Vincent Hanna suit, and it also could be dressed down to be a Sonny Crockett suit if you just roll the sleeves up ever so slightly and wear a different shirt. But I was like, you know, when I was at home in Sydney going, what am I going to take? I'm like, oh, I've got to wear the Neil McCauley. Like, you can't – I'm about to meet De Niro. Mm-hmm. I'm going to wear Neil McCauley garb. I've currently got, you know, very extensive facial hair, so it's like – I could even trim it down into a Neil McCauley goatee if I was really that inclined. But I'm like, no, I'm going to do my beard, but I'm going to wear the Neil McCauley suit. So I had the suit on And it just felt, everything felt right. Like the day felt right. And I remember walking into Bilger's house because Bilger wasn't sure what he was going to wear. He knew those guys, you know, dress in a variety of ways. Pacino kind of like old rock star. And De Niro is like very kind of like your dad, basically is how he dresses these days. But I was like, no, I'm going to wear a suit. And Bilger's like, oh, you're wearing a suit? I'm like, I'm sorry, Bilger, but like, if I'm going to meet Robert De Niro, I'm dressing like Neil McCauley. Like that's the suit is what, and really also it was for like, if Michael Mann was there, he would have clocked how I was dressed. So like, he's dressed like you. You know, like he would have clocked it. It's just like Vincent. So yeah, no, I wore my Neil McCauley suit and it just, I don't know, everything felt right. That night, everything felt really right. And then we walked out of the theater and I met Eve, who gave me the Wes Studi shirt. And
yeah,
it was just crazy. It was a crazy, crazy, crazy couple of days. And we got your hands on the book too. You got a book. Have you read it?
I had another book to finish first. So I literally started it last night.
Yeah.
Have you read it?
Yeah. I'm almost through it. I have, you know, one of those things where I'm just taking my sweet ass time. It's one of those books. I'm not in a rush because we've got more time before it actually gets released to the public. But yeah, it's definitely I'm enjoying the shit out of it. I would just say this. It's like, it's not a sequel. Like in the same way that you feel with a movie, there's not the pressure of like, it's trying to do the movie. It's doing something else and it's doing it in a different medium. So, but the great thing that it has is that it has the characters coming to life on the page, which is easy for it to do. It's so brilliantly done and easy because you're like, oh, I know who Casals is and I know who Hannah is and I know who Neil McCauley is. Like they just leap off the page, you know? So it's great. I'm enjoying it. Well, but it's very, very lean, muscular writing.
Yeah, I could tell that. I've only read the prologue, which essentially just recounts the movie Heat to you, which is fine. But it is very clean and crisp. And it's great because most things like this are essentially fan fiction, you know? Because in my opinion, if it's not the original creator, it's fan fiction. I don't care if it has the official imprint of some corporation that gets to designate who makes what. Like,
yes,
if it was just me writing it, and by the way, if somebody had asked me, Jordan, do you by yourself want to write a Heat sequel, I would have said yes, but it would have been fan fiction. And yes, and this is not. I mean, Meg Gardner's very talented, and then but it's got Michael Mann sitting there, you know, given his imprint. I don't know, I have no idea what their working relationship was like, but that's Michael Mann did it. So
yeah, like, it's as Michael Mann as it gets for me. Like, and I'm not as familiar with Meg's work either, but you can feel when it needs to be lean. It's one of those things. I feel like it's the most Michael Mann in the writing when it feels like so much is happening between every line.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and you'll see that as you read along, like it's moving at a clip. It feels like places, it describes things, but it is not, doesn't get bogged down. Like, you know, one of the key examples I say is like, it doesn't sort of Tolkienize it. Like there are some parts of those Tolkien books where like he describes someone's foot for five pages and you're like, get over it. Let's go, baby. I've got time. You know, I've got no time to read any more about a hobbit's foot. Like, let's go.
Corint McCarthy is the same. I love Corint McCarthy, but he will talk about a oscillating arroyo and the desiccated, you know, like blah blah blah. And you're like, okay, great. So there was a hill.
Yeah, that doesn't happen to your favorite author and one of my favorite authors, James Elroy. He is just fucking moving, baby. Like, let's go. And so yeah, it's very good. But it has also helped me crystallize when we do the follow-up series, which will be a bit of a companion for the book. The book has parts. I was originally going to do chapters, and I guess I'll articulate it here more succinctly, is there are years that the book covers. It's covers in parts, and I think that we'll probably do as many episodes as there are parts and then have multiple people that will come on to talk about the things that they really resonated with, you know, and the things that they really love about those sections and segments of the book. And, you know, it'll much more resemble our Zodiac Chronicle series in that we'll have multiple people talking and those things to really kind of give people value for money for the time listening. And I'll try and keep the episodes, you know, around an hour or so with like plenty of bonus content dropping just like this Roman Ran on 1 Heat Minute or any great combos that are just too amazing. I'll release them into the main feed. But yeah, I'm excited about talking about it because it's something completely different. And yeah, it was just nice. We got our heat books. We saw each other. Mm-hmm. Or fireworks in New York City for some reason.
Hey,
for us, and it was just like beautiful.
Yeah, it was. It was a beautiful time. I had a great time the night before. Brianna Ashby and everybody who was there. It was, you know, just
Dave Fear popped in for a minute.
Yeah,
Rolling Stone movies editor popped in, and Man Fax was there, and then those guys weren't there for the next night, but it was. And Brianna handed me the original artworks.
That is beautiful.
The original artworks and the original One Heat Minute logo, which I treasure. I'm just waiting to get some frames in for them. So yeah, it was a truly, truly special couple of days.
Yeah, I wish you could have stayed longer. You missed a great noir at the bar with me and Sean Cosby, and
that is my friends. One massive. I mean, look. Travis couldn't make it, which was devastating. And I know we've talked about our friend Travis hating. And I think every conversation we've had, he's been so mad at me that he didn't end up coming over, or that I couldn't actually get to LA for a longer stopover. But Sean Cosby had a flight cancel, so it would have been Sean Cosby, his lovely wife, and all of us together at that bar in the Bronx, which would have been something even more crazy and special at the time. But yeah, it's just that's one regret I have. But you guys went and did Noir at the Bar, and Sean went there. Oh, I mean, it was so good. It would have been amazing.
It was a lot of fun. It was a crossing of worlds, although I guess Sean and I exist in both of the worlds, so it wasn't that weird. But but Sean Burns got to come out and see us both read, and there's a lot of other great writers, Rob Hart, Alex Segura.
Alex, I like Alex a lot. I know Alex. We spoke to Alex, Maria and I, for Josie and the Podcats. I would have loved to see Alex too.
Oh, that's cool. I know you knew Alex. Yeah.
Yeah. So Alex, because of his, he's obviously now like crossing over and being a great like crime author, but has like written for Archie, like he was in that world for a little while. So like, yeah, we got to speak to him. So it was, yeah, that's a crazy, I wish, again, more of that crossover of these people. But like, I think you said something right at the beginning of our convo, which is hilarious, which is, and I'll just touch on this, is walking up to Bilger's house and looking through his front door,
mm-hmm,
and seeing him walking towards the door was so surreal. And then seeing you in person,
mm-hmm,
was just fucking surreal. Like, it's surreal because we've had hours of conversations, maybe days at this point, of conversations on this through Zoom, and it's just like, oh my god, when I saw you in person and Connor, and it was just great. And seeing Sean Burns, and he even laughed that I said it wasn't on my bucket list to kiss his sweaty drunken face. But, you know, it was on my bucket list, just not quite as high as De Niro, not quite as high.
No, and I'm sure you get to, you win in this one, find out that you're tall and that I am very medium sized.
That was one of the first things I told my wife. She's like, what was it like meeting all the guys? And I said, they were so mad at me that I was tall. I said, especially Sean. Sean was like, motherfucker, you're tall. Your stupid camera makes you look small. I thought you were going to be short. Now you're tall and handsome. God damn it. And I was like, that's very nice of you to say. But it was special. It was surreal. And, you know, I was sitting in the airport at JFK waiting for my flight to go back to LAX and then bounce home. And I was talking to my wife and kids and FaceTiming them and stuff. And they're like, how, you know, it was amazing and talking through stuff. And I was like, I won't believe it. It's going to take me a month to believe it. It's going to take more people to go, hey, tell that story. Tell that story about how you met to dear. You know, it's going to take more of that.
Well, like I said, I mean, I'm really glad I got to be there. You know,
I'm glad you were there, man. You made it. It was, you know, Bilger didn't get, Bilger was originally meant to sit next to us and then got kind of stuck in the post Q&A chaos and then sat in another spot. But like being right next to you and being able to like, you know, just like be together and like bump fists, you know, a la Sonny Crockett and Ricardo Tubbs, like when cool shit was happening on the screen and laughing our asses off. And we could probably hear Sean Burns laughing down, you know, with us at all of our favorite bits. And then just marveling at this, how gorgeous this thing is, and the crescendo of the planes and just everything, all those beats that we've spoken about. And, you know, you got to see me with all my hand gestures and the other thing is no one, and maybe you're like one of the exceptions, Jordan, is like, I watch this movie with a symphony of voices in my head. I can hear all of my favorite people in the world talking to me while it's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you know, in Indigenous storytelling in Australia for our First Nations people, they talk about like dreaming, and that's their like religion, and the stories that make, you know, and that the importance of like oral history. And I feel like this like oral history / oral examination of this text that's been so important to all of us is like, I feel like a conduit to it. So like, even though, you know, tomorrow the internet doesn't exist, like I have the stories, like the stories uh-huh. exist in me. And it's like, I hear those stories every time I listen. So, you know, that when I watch it, there's a transcendent level where it's not just the movie anymore for me. It's every person's experience of the movie that I've spoken to and mine at the same time. And I think that meeting of those two things colliding is something that's out of this world, and I can't ever describe it. And having you next to me while that's happening, and it feels like you're another antenna for that. It was the most special thing. And so thank you for just like me, when I said I was coming, when I had no clue if I was actually going to be able to do it, but you just being like, yeah, yeah, I'm going to be there. I'm going, and you're coming too, right? This is happening. Like when you sort of like, I'm buying a ticket. I'm like, I said to my wife, I'm like, shit, Jordan bought a ticket. Okay, well, I guess I better be going then. When that was happening, it was just crazy.
It's the best. Well, you know, it was amazing. And now we need to engineer some kind of showing of it here in LA.
30th anniversary. Here. 30th anniversary is right around the corner.
I guess it is, because I just checked, because, you know, in the prologue of Heat, he gives the exact address of the bank.
Yes.
And it is accurate. I just checked on Google Maps. It is actually the address of, you look at it and you go, oh yeah, that's where they walked out of.
Yes.
444 Flower Street. So like, yeah, man, we gotta do a
Heat tour. Yeah, no, that's what I said to a few people. I'm like, it was great to go to New York, but there's also something. The one final piece that's missing is to go to LA and spend a chunk of time in LA and do a Heat tour, you know, drive mm-hmm. around with Jordan and Travis and go to the Heat locations. One day Jordan and the Heat locations, next day Travis and the Inherent Vice locations.
Uh-huh.
And then maybe like Charles Hood and Drew drive up to Southern California into the San Francisco locations for Zodiac, and then come back and spend a chunk of time in California and like really ingratiate myself there and just meet so many of the other amazing people and all of our friends. And if we can maybe try and find that restaurant where the crooks dine out in Heat, I think our whole game night gang need to all be around that restaurant. We've got to find a restaurant that looks like it.
We can definitely do that, but surely that's a findable,
restaurant.
I know that the restaurant where Macaulay meets Edie is closed.
Yes.
Because I ate there back in the day.
Yes. And Kate Mandolini's is closed, but maybe that other one isn't. Maybe someone is, maybe it's there.
It has the look of one of those restaurants that lasts forever.
Yes.
So we have that going for us. And by the way, throw in Collateral. Why not?
Yeah. Let's do that. There's some fun locations there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And good
food, I'm sure, on the Collateral tour as well. It feels like Collateral would have some of the best. I think Justin Lieberman, who was an assistant for Michael Mann at the time, when he spoke to us about Collateral, said he found the best tacos in LA on that trip. So, you know, that's something else as well. I know you and I are foodies, so when we hear things like that, it just gets locked in the brain. Like, yeah, that's something.
Well, I mean, the thing about the best tacos in LA is that, yeah, they're on some street corner someplace in a neighborhood. Yeah.
Yeah.
I went 2 months ago, I went to a concert at the Hollywood Forever Cemetery it's an actual like cemetery. They have a Masonic lodge there where they do concerts. It's very cool. And I went there, and then I walked out. I was just on Santa Monica Boulevard in the middle of like Eastern Hollywood. And there was a big spit set up. They were selling, you know, tacos al pastor with the spit with the pineapples on top that you slice off and you get, and you know, you pay for it by Venmoing some guy named, you know, just like some random dude, you know, he's like, here's my Venmo, and you Venmo him the money. And then I started walking away with my tacos. I took a bite and I turned around. I was like, this is the best shit I ever had in my life. Like, what do you, like, you know, like, and that's the magic of, I mean, not to go on a rant here about Los Angeles food, but the best taco in Los Angeles and the worst taco in Los Angeles look absolutely identical until you, you know, until you get in on it. But that's, yeah, absolutely. Oh, we will eat well.
We will eat well. Look, thank you so much for doing this. It's great to talk to you. Can you plug the Living Daylights out of your upcoming book release, please, so that people know what the hell's happening?
Absolutely, yeah. So I have two novels coming out in the next, like, 6 months, which is pretty weird. One is called The Last King of California. It's sort of like the Seven Samurai if the farmers were meth dealers and the bandits were the Aryan Brotherhood, and that the samurai was one skinny 19-year-old kid. That's only coming out in the UK. You know, there are going to be ways to get it in America. I'm hoping that there will be a US release in the future, but that's not in the cards right now. And then in January, I have Everybody Knows coming out here in America. It is my big LA Hollywood sleaze crime novel.
Formerly titled Hollywood Sickos, which I read it as. God, it's good, Jordan. It's so fucking good.
Thank
it's
you.
Really good.
When I was in New York, I did have a meeting at my publisher, Mulholland, and my editor told the publisher, the working title of this was Hollywood Sickos. And the publisher said, thank you for changing the title. I know. To me, there's a real purity to Hollywood Sickos, like, bam. I wish we lived in an age where, like, books like Hollywood Sickos with, like, a, you know, I can see the cover from the 80s.
You said Carolco is in your lizard brain, and that's a Carolco adaptation title.
You know, when they show it, not to keep dragging this on forever, when I watched Basic Instinct, at one point they do you see mock-ups of the book that she has just finished writing, which is her, like, and it's called Shooter, which I literally saw it. I was like, I'm gonna write a book named Shooter someday. But the cover, like, I was like, oh my God, all I want to do is read and then write novels that Catherine from Basic Instinct would write. Like, that is, like, that is the vibe. That is the vibe.
It's a big vibe.
And so anyway, so two books coming out soon. Very excited for both of them. And
well, in Australia, for anyone who's listening in Australia, like, in Australia, we're getting stuff from the UK is par for the course. Like, we do it when we're, like, we buy stuff from Amazon US, we buy it from Amazon UK. So I'll get my hands on that physical copy from there. I can't wait to finally get my hands on Last King in California, because I've only had it in whatever Word documents that you've sent me and that I turned into a PDF so I could read it on my Kindle. And I'm so excited for you, man. I'm like, that truly, I love Last King, but Everybody Knows is, It's it's fucking amazing. I'm such a huge fan of your work, so I can't wait for more people to get their hands on these. And I know that a lot of our friends have had the luck of reading it already, and are like, and they're so impressed that I think it's turned into people being mad. They're like, this is so good, I'm mad at it. It's one of those things that it's just so great that you get mad because it's so great. But no, you deserve it, and you're amazing, and I can't wait to read it.
Awesome. Thanks for having me, man. Always, always, always a pleasure.
Baseball fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win a prize every day during the baseball season. Step into the batter's box for BetMGM's Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. Pick any area of the strike zone and take your best swing. If you get a single, double, triple, or home run, you'll receive a prize. Smash a home run to collect a bonus bet on us. Just log into your BetMGM sports account to get started. Then visit your promotion section to access the Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. You'll score a prize if you hit a single, double, triple, or home run. There's nothing more exciting than going yard. So swing for the fences with the king of sportsbooks. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary depending on the market and expire 24 hours from issuance. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.